Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning and welcome to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded territory of the Hunkaminam and Squamish-speaking peoples. My name is Jesse. Today, I am bringing you a recording of a press conference slash roundtable discussion. Yesterday, November 25th, Monday, at 312 Main Street, we marked the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women with a press conference and, as I mentioned, roundtable discussion hosted by Battered Women Support Services as part of a two-day conference, which is ongoing. Today, Tuesday, November 26th, there's also programming throughout the day. This press conference and roundtable address the interconnected crises of housing precarity, sexualized violence, intimate partner violence, femicide, and the disproportionate violence faced by Indigenous women and girls. Myself and Danny, our two community radio journalists, attended the conference and recorded. And what you're going to hear this hour on Speak Up is a edited recording of one of the press conferences and discussions that took place on Monday. So without further ado, here is that conference.
My name is Joanne, and I serve on the Deputy Commissioner. I'm from the territory, and I'm on the Please, I want us to take a moment and I want us to really pause collectively. Let us be mindful and acknowledging the lands that we are landing on today. We are on the stolen territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. Since time immemorial, they have been the stewards of these lands, and I give thanks, appreciation, and praise to be able to live, work, play, and pray here. I want to thank each participant that is here today for taking their busy schedules. This is a critical discussion. Some have traveled long distances for this time. We're great because they're here to voice that the experiences of Indigenous women in the northern regions of our province, particularly from the Highway of Tears. To set the tone for our discussion, I'd like to share an introduction to ensure that we collectively are in the fight for missing Indigenous women. Let's be clear, MMIWG is an epidemic. It affects all at this table, in this room, and on the front lines. Aptly so, MMIWG has been described as Canada's ongoing genocide and Canada's dirty secret. It is essential to recognize that understanding violence against Indigenous women and girls is impossible without first acknowledging the troubling history as a colonial nation. Colonization has profoundly shaped the experiences of Indigenous women and girls, embedding ongoing injustices, hatred, racism, and gender discrimination from the moment of their birth. The legacy of subjugation includes cultural injustices, systemic inequities, lack of self-determination, and institutional apartheid. This ongoing legacy must be fully understood, for without it, the government will continue to overlook the urgent calls for accountability regarding the more than 5,000 Indigenous women and girls who have been murdered or who remain missing. We can only work towards meaningful change and justice by confronting this historical context. Indigenous women and girls have faced a long history of violence and marginalization, which is deeply rooted in the political, economic, and social structures established since colonization. The systemic inequality has led to widespread victimization and trauma, creating a crisis that every Indigenous woman or girl is required to live with daily. The ongoing struggle for justice and equity highlights the urgent need for societal change and recognition of the unique challenges faced by Indigenous women. Addressing these issues is critical to breaking the cycle of violence and ensuring their rights and dignity are upheld. The Canadian government's ongoing neglect of this epidemic reflects a troubling disregard for the serious concerns raised by Indigenous communities. By dismissing these issues as insignificant, the government perpetuates coercive norms that further marginalize Indigenous women and girls. This indifference not only shapes public perception, but also condones the violence inflicted upon them. To effect meaningful change, the government needs to acknowledge this epidemic and take urgent, comprehensive action to address the systemic factors contributing to the violence and discrimination. In 2016, in response to repeated demands and calls of action from Indigenous community leaders, community groups, and Indigenous women on the front lines, the Canadian government established the National Inquiry into MMIWG. In April 2019, the National Inquiry published its final report and presented it to the Canadian government. 231 recommendations were put forth in the report. According to the commissioners, there was centuries-long genocide that, based on gender, identity, and ethnicity, purposefully targeted Indigenous women and girls. The root causes of the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls in crisis include colonization, historical trauma, racism, and sexual objectification. The final report of the National Inquiry into MMIWG concluded that the violence is caused by the state's actions and inactions, which are deeply rooted in colonialism and colonial ideologies. As we reflect 5 years later, despite having poured millions of dollars into this inquiry, despite having heard over 750 voices, many are left questioning what tangible changes have occurred for Indigenous women and girls. What has changed for our grandmothers, our mothers, our sisters, our nieces, our aunties? Today, we have an amazing panel of women, Indigenous women, who are going to share their perspective on how best we move forward. Let's face it, there is not a day that goes by that many of us in our social media feeds don't see a plea from families asking for help to find a missing sister, daughter, mother. So, let us begin. And before we do that, I'd like to ask each of our panel members here to just give a brief introduction. And let's get talking. Thank you.
I just want to say good morning and hello to the Veteran Women's Supporting Society. My traditional name is Kolki Chad, which means Golden Spruce Woman, also known as Bernie Williams. I'm still working along for justice. I'm a frontline worker. I currently work for Alvatari and in the courts here, but I'm still on the front lines. I'm part of the team here with Gladys Reddick. We've won at the Walk for Justice. We've won across Canada 7 times, and we're doing our final walk next year. We'll be walking 93 days. I am a family member. I am a survivor. My apologies. I want to acknowledge that the land of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh, and if there's any elders that are here, I say Hawa, any chiefs here, I want to. I'm very emotional here, just seeing so many of our sisters that we haven't seen for a long time. And I just want to say Hawa again for inviting me.
Good morning. My name is Gladys Reddick. I'd like to thank the host nations, Squamish and Musqueam, for allowing me to speak, and I thank the BWSS for inviting me to speak here. I am a family representative of the Highway of Tears. My niece Tamara Chipman remains missing today, and it's been 19 years. And yes, I did co-found the Walk for Justice with Bernie Williams, and our goal was to set those 231 calls to justice on behalf of our families that we were speaking for. And what we managed to do through those walks was to be a voice for the families, because we know that, first of all, what a family member goes through when their loved ones go missing, and we want to create that change to start having the government work with us instead of against us. And we were the ones that put it out there that there was a genocide happening, and it was acknowledged. And if anybody remembers when we were at the Canadian Human Rights Museum, it took a couple of days for Justin Trudeau to spit out the word genocide, but it was proven. So we're going to continue. Next year's walk is going to be based on a big fail on behalf of the government for not implementing the 231 calls to justice. Also, the Highway of Tears, 33 recommendations that were made way back in 2006. And that'll be it for now. Thank you.
My name is Lorna Brown, and I am the founder of the Tears to Hope Society, based in Terrace, BC, along the Highway of Tears. Our family started raising awareness and becoming advocates for missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls when my niece, Tamara Chipman, went missing from Prince Rupert. Like my sister mentioned, it's been 19 years that we haven't had answers. And my cousin Florence Mizell started the very first Highway of Tears walk and named the Highway of Tears as a result of the women that were going missing at the time. There was four women in our small community that used to be known as Morristown, is now Winsett, BC. We still have no answers, and so we started this society 5 years ago, and we have been raising awareness every year, as well as meeting with government to implement the 231 calls to justice. Our family was witness at the National Inquiry for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls, and we continue to look at ways of prevention. And yeah, I'm just honored to be here, and thank you for BWSS for inviting us to sign.
I'm a Hebrew. Good morning. I'm Leslie Barley. I'm a member of the Miska Nation, Miska Tsamos. First of all, I really want to acknowledge Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh always ensuring that we are feeling welcome and loved and taken care of. And I want to thank them and the support services for putting on the support work and continuing to lead as the strongest and most inclusive ally organization in this province. I want to acknowledge Sandra Delarant, who's come all the way out here from Manitoba and put down her work for a day to come and work and inspire us. Thank you. And lastly, I want to acknowledge all the women I'm sitting with. I feel really humble that I'm sitting with all of you, because you've been working on the ground, doing so much of what you do. I'm familiar with BC Friendship Centers, and really looking after the anti-violence provincial funds. And I'm also with Central City Foundation, where we are trying to build, just down the road here, a a seven-story building specifically for Indigenous women and their families. But of course, you know, it's Vancouver and the red tape is humongous, so I'll get back to all that.
I'm Sam, this is Dupe Jahaikin and Dukyank. My traditional high name struggles with my older English name, Summer Rain. I was just looking at the table of directions as well, and I was thinking, you know, I'm the baby at this table. We get up and walking alongside these amazing women for the last 25 years, and as they have taught me and led me and invested in me in this movement. I look back at the end, I'm a family member, they're an inspirer, and my life's work is MMIWG. I don't have a choice, it's not an option. It's what I was born to do, is what I have to do to ensure that there is not one more Indigenous woman or girl who goes missing or who is murdered. That's my goal, that's my dream. And so I am so excited to sit at this table with these powerful, strong women warriors on the front lines every day. 5 years after the inquiry, it feels almost as if the conversation has become not needed because the inquiry is done. Yet the inquiry has not done anything for our women. If anything, more of our women have gone missing or murdered since then. So now is more important than any time at all. So, how up, Peshka, looking forward to this conversation.
Able to find and told us in church about how accomplished in preservation, how accomplished in New Georgia. My name is Faye Lady with the Aboriginal Women's Action Network, acknowledging my relations in the territory. My great-grandmother is from the Squamish Nation, and my great-great-grandmother from Kinsey, and my great-great-great-grandmother from Chehalis, the Coast Salish, through and through, and these are all my relations here. Aboriginal Women's Action Network has been around for 29 years now, and I left to go to small town BC. I'm at home in my community, Oahu First Nation. Have my regular job there as the wellness coordinator, but also teaching language with North Island College. And today I brought some women with me. There's Darla Leo right here in the beige, and my cousin Marina Hackett over here, and Charlene Leo, and Lisa Paul, and they're all from Homahku, and these are the women that I work with in my own community. I just wanted to say that I'm really hugely disappointed with the outcome of the National Inquiry when they began to do the planning for the action plan. First of all, there was no women's table, and I have always stood with women to have our own voices. It's not good enough that everyone else speaks on our behalf. And in our work today with the Aboriginal Women's Action Network, one of the areas that we are working on is for moms, because as you know, Cindy Blackstock's court case, human rights case, is coming through, and we're about to have huge changes. And the chiefs and these other organizations have a big voice in there, but where are the moms? Like, why are the moms not included in this conversation? Why do we pay so much lip service to prevention instead of apprehension or theft of our children? And we like to talk about the importance of matriarchs, but I'd like to see us for once put it into practice, and it's still not happening, and there's still I forgot where I was going with that. But yeah, I think that with this issue of our women constantly going missing, I think that we really need to focus on the women themselves rather than everybody else trying to fix our problems for us. And that's why I was advocating the guaranteed livable income because it would give women a degree of autonomy rather than having to rely on everybody else around us. That's it for now. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Wendy Mendez. I am originally from Guatemala. I moved here in 1986 or 85, I don't remember. There's years after my mom was forcibly disappeared and during the war in Guatemala, and one of the reasons why I came here as a refugee. I am very happy to be sharing this table here with you. I really acknowledge and appreciate the opportunity to speak, to be living, working, and you know, trying to stand in solidarity with indigenous communities, especially women on these unceded territories. It's such a great honor for me to be here. I am one of the co-founders of an organization called Hijos, which means Sons and Daughters of the Disappeared, which is now an international network. I'm also a petitioner before the Inter-American Human Rights Court in a case known as the Military Diary, where my mom was cataloged along with other family members. And I'm also one of the plaintiffs in a national case in Guatemala in this case. I have currently joined the team with BWSS, supporting women that are experiencing and surviving violence. And so I'm just really happy to be here and excited for the discussion to begin. Thank you.
First of all, I would like to acknowledge the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil Waututh peoples for having me on their territory. Thank you so much. My name is Pella Halcia Lorelai Williams. I am from the Skanty Nations on my mom's side and Skagalis on my dad's side. I am a family member of a missing woman, Belinda Williams. My grandma was murdered. My cousin, Tanya Holland, was killed by serial killer Robert Pinkton. My other cousin was taken by a different serial killer, Terry Arnold. She was raped by him in the mountains when she was only 16 years old. Thankfully, she got away. She lives with survivor's guilt to this day. My aunt was pushed out of a window here in the downtown east side. Thankfully, she survived. So this is why I do the work that I do around this issue. Of course, I have my own stuff with violence and survivor and all of that. I ended up starting a dance group called Butterflies in Spirit, and we raise awareness of this issue. The majority of us are family members of NMIWG 2S+. Some of our members we're not just representing Canada anymore, we're representing the disappeared from Latin America. We have members from Mexico, Colombia, Guatemala, Ecuador, and we're not just a dance group anymore. We kind of evolved into a group that supports family members of NMIWG 2S+ and the disappeared with searches, candlelight vigils, meetings with police, coroners. We set up press conferences with the media. We just do anything and everything we can to support these families because we know that they don't get the resources unless they're coming to people like us. They're not getting any help from the police or any of those people because the systems are so racist. And a lot of my experience actually comes from Mexico when it comes to searches. I actually go back and forth to Mexico quite a bit to search for the disappeared, and this is where we actually found human remains and bodies. And with that experience, I've been able to bring it up here in Canada to support the families that I work with up here. And even with the landfill, when I first heard about the landfill, I was just on my way to Mexico. And when I got down there, I asked so many questions about their searches in landfills because I wanted to bring it back to Canada to support the families in Winnipeg as much as I could. But I'll just stop there. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So let's get into this. So the first question I have for the panel
is what in your view should be immediate actions concerning MMIWG?
I would like to see the green plan change to something more concrete and tangible. The government conveniently calls it a green plan that's continually shifting and changing, and it's just a code word for saying they're going to do nothing. I think that we need absolute targets, and we need to demand that they develop those targets with the National Action Plan to end the murders and disappearance of Indigenous women, and we know that it's still going strong, that the murders and disappearances are still going really strong. And the levels of violence in this country against Indigenous women is overwhelming. And the level of looking down at Indigenous women, the racism is overwhelming. I just wanted to quickly share a story of what happened to me about 2 weeks ago in Campbell River, where I live. There's this transition house there that I support, and they have a store, a community store, a thrift store. And I was at the thrift store buying things for our events, Halloween, Christmas, whatever. And I was coming out of there with an armful of goods, and the cashier asked me, "Did you pay for that sweater that you're wearing?" And I'm an elder, and my friends were teasing me about how young I look, but I am old. And as an elder, I can't believe that I was treated like that by a women's organization. And I promptly sent off a letter to them and registered my complaint. At first, they were going to ask me to come in and do an anti-racism workshop for them. We scheduled for December the 7th, and a couple of days ago, they withdrew that. And so I think that speaks volumes about how we are viewed as Indigenous women across this country. We are the lowest of the low, and we're treated so badly. We're treated badly not only in the non-Native world, but inside of our own communities. Our opinions matter far less than anybody else. And when our women are murdered or disappeared, the families rally around and keep it silent. And not all families, though, those ones over there are very loud. But in small town BC, they do try to cover it up as best they can and pretend that nothing happened. And there's a long history of that in our community. There have been women that have been murdered and it's been covered up. So I think our status seriously needs to be changed.
Thank you.
I want to take you back just a while back. It was not that long ago that Summer Rae and Joanne and I received a call of a young woman that was trafficked about 2.5 months ago. We got the call from Senator Michelle Odette of this young woman. You don't even have to, we just got everything. And it took us just a networking. Why I'm bringing this up is we have no safe spaces to bring these young women when we do find them. One of the things that we have witnessed is that when, thank God, for Summer and for Joanne, because there's just two of us that went out there. The only thing that we had, it looked like a pen, and it was a taser that we were carrying. So when we got to this place, we didn't know what we were walking into. Again, after Summer had everything all set up, Joanne, thank God, and she's both French too, because I don't speak any of that. And like this young girl, she came back from northeast Quebec. She ran away, 18 years old, ended up in Quebec City, and she was taken from there. On the promissory that they were going to take good care of her, make sure she has money, and all the things you want to hear. I spoke to my boss. My boss is